This is 5-on-3. Center ice for all things Islanders, Rangers, and all news across the NHL on WFUV Sports.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to 5-on-3 WFUV Sports Best If Only Hockey Podcast. I am Tucker Austin, joined this afternoon by Emma Leonardi, Jack Alexander, and Sophia Smith is behind the glass working production for us. She has a mic back there, so hopefully she'll be able to join the conversation as well. And it's a beautiful day in the NHL. And you guys want to know why that is? It's because the New Jersey Devils are in first place in the Metropolitan and have one of, if not maybe the best record in the NHL right now. I mean, they're 6-1. To start the season, couldn't ask for anything better. A six-game heater after losing the first game of the season to the Carolina Hurricanes. It's their longest winning streak since at least 2023. They finally got the monkey off their back of winning four games in a row. They just couldn't do it for the longest time. Not really sure why, but they finally have figured things out. They're firing on all cylinders. They're really clicking. Rolling four lines, every line looks good, but we'll get into them. We'll get into the New York Rangers, and we'll get into the New York Islanders as well. Before we get started, though, how are you guys doing? Emma, we can start with you.
You know, I'm great. I personally would be better, I feel like, if the Cavs were doing better, but, you know, I'm great, and I'm ready to talk about some New York hockey right now. Yeah, and I guess New Jersey as well.
Yeah, I'd say the same. I mean, Rangers, you know, but on and off. At home, they've been horrible. Away, they've been pretty good. So, you know, ready to just talk about some hockey.
Yeah, the Rangers dropped another home game in their last time they were in action. When was this game?
It was Monday.
Monday? Yeah, three nights ago as of the recording. It's October 23rd as of the recording of this podcast, just for clarification. But the Rangers did finally score a goal at home.
Finally, first minute.
They broke the streak in the first minute as well. Artemi Panarin, he finally got on the scoreboard as well. So that was good to see for Rangers fans. Though in some general news that actually has to do with the Islanders, the NHL has scrapped their Olympic send-off program that they were going to do in the start of 2026 to coincide with players going abroad for the Olympics in February and part of March. But now they've thrown that out the window. And in addition to that, they also announced that in 2027, since the send-off was supposed to happen at UBS Arena, they've awarded the Islanders and UBS Arena the All-Star Game in 2027. And it's going to be another like skills competition mashup like the last All-Star Game was. I think we remember how well that All-Star Game was received, considering what happened the next year, which was the Four Nations. But we were talking about it a little bit before the show. I was going to bring it up and be all up in arms about, like, why are they taking away the Four Nations? But then Sophia expertly calmed me down and was like, no, it's fine. Like, the Four Nations is going to get oversaturated. But what do you guys make of the return of the skills competition? I can't imagine it amounts to very much.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something. I mean, it's kind of just a way for the players and fans to just have a little bit of fun, I guess. But in reality, it doesn't really mean much. The players don't, I feel like, in my opinion, don't really care. But, you know, it's entertaining and it's different, but, you know,
and even when they added like the cash prizes for winning, it still didn't get like that really much more interesting because the best skater still won. Yeah. So,
yeah, I'm like, I don't even think I really have an opinion. I'm just kind of like, okay, like
sure, whatever.
Great, like awesome.
It's not like baseball where it's like, oh, this is pretty cool. Like you got the home run derby. You have like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they also like they benefit from actually being able to play a game. Like, when they've tried to play an actual All-Star game, it's kind of worked out really weird. Like, they've done, each division gets a team, and then there's, like, four teams playing. Haven't they done it, like, tournament style, where each division's teams, like, played each other in kind of a tournament situation? But then they've also done, like, a full game where all four divisions are, like, subbing onto the ice in a game that's just like everybody against everybody, and it just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. So the NHL has a really hard time dealing with how to like do all-star games. So who knows? Like, we'll see what happens in 2027, but me personally, I'm not that concerned with it. I'm more focused on watching Olympic hockey in February in 2026. So that's just some minor news that that just came out either yesterday or earlier today. Also, two nights ago, the Colorado Avalanche debuted the Nordiques jerseys, which I was really happy to see. I think those jerseys were one of the best looking probably in the NHL history. You guys think that the Avalanche should wear them more often? I think they should wear them like way more often, but at like same time, it's also like, oh, bring back the Nordiques then.
Yeah, I mean, like, but the question is, if they wear it more often, does it make it less special? I feel like. What's your opinion about
that? It could, but it would also look really cool.
That
if
is
they
true.
Wore it more
would
often.
Look, it would look really cool.
They benefit from the fact that their current color scheme, like the way that they've kind of progressed towards a brighter red, brighter blue, they were kind of muted for a little while in the 2010s, but now, like, then the Avalanche kind of rebranded again. Their color scheme currently is pretty close to the Nordiques color scheme. It's not one-to-one, but I feel like even when they wear the Nordiques alternates, it's not too much of a departure from what the Avs already look like.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it would get that old, but I think there's definitely like a concern that, you know, again, it's another oversaturation thing. We don't want too many Four Nations face-offs, and we don't want too many alternate jerseys getting worn. Although I think the Rangers should wear their centennial jerseys.
Yes.
They should wear those constantly this year because they look really, really great. But let's get into the three teams in the metro area here. We are going to start with the New Jersey Devils because the last time I hosted 5-on-3, I didn't start with the Devils, but now they're in first place in the metro, and I have no choice.
Well, they're also first place in the NHL, I think. According to my calculations.
Huge for the program.
Huge.
And it's not because the Devils played two weird games in the Czech Republic early either this year. That's not the reason why. They're legitimately in first place in the NHL.
Yep.
Again, like I mentioned at the start of the show, they lost that first game of the season to the Hurricanes in Raleigh. Still can't figure those guys out. But since then, they have been on one of the best heaters that I have ever witnessed out of this Devils team. They beat the Lightning on the road, Blue Jackets on the road. Then they took down the defending Stanley Cup champions for 2 years in a row now, the Florida Panthers at home. The last time I was on this show, I think they were getting ready to play the Maple Leafs. And so they then took down the Maple Leafs, took down the Minnesota Wild at home last night. And that was after the Wild came off of beating the New York Rangers. So the Devils are hosting the Sharks tomorrow night, October 24th. So honestly, that game looks like another game that they should probably win. But they got a great performance out of Nico Daws last night in his first game of the season. He wound up making 30 saves, although like majority of those came in the second half of the game. First half of the game, the Devils' defense was so locked down. And then on top of all of that, Jack Hughes had a hat trick three nights ago. I think it wasn't the Wild game. It was the Leafs game in Toronto. He picked up a hat trick. But then last night against the Wild, it was kind of a... It was like all of the Devils' stars were playing really well for multiple games in a row. Guys like Timo Meier, Jack Hughes, Nico Hischier were all getting involved on the scoring plays and were driving the team forward. But last night against the Wild was a game where those names finally like couldn't get onto the score sheet, at least in the way that they usually do. But like in Devils teams of the past, they would have lost this game because their studs didn't score. But instead, you know, they battle it out for almost the full first period, 16 minutes in and change, and Paul Cotter finds the net first out of everybody for his first of the season. His line with Connor Brown and Dawson Mercer has been playing so well. Really glad to see Mercer finally, like, settle into his spot. But then Dylan scores in the second period, his second goal in two games, which is just like, nah, it's not what the Devils are looking for out of that guy, but he's still giving them scoring. And Arseny Gritsyuk, first NHL goal for the kid from Russia, assisted by Timo Meier, so he did get involved there, and it was a power play goal. Power play actually reminds me, Jesper Bratt scored the final goal. It was an empty netter. Jesper Bratt's the best player in the NHL. But this game was really crazy to me because the Wild have an excellent power play to start the season. Really, really lethal. But they had three opportunities against the Devils last night and scored zero. The Devils have now killed well over 20 straight penalties in the NHL. And, I mean, the kill was pretty good last year. But this is, like, unprecedented levels of penalty killing. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on the New Jersey Devils right now. I could obviously talk about them forever. but we could look specifically at the Sharks game tomorrow night. We could look specifically at tomorrow night's Sharks game. The Sharks play the Rangers tonight, which should be interesting. Maybe the Blue Shirts can soften them up a little bit.
It's interesting because, like, with the Wild, it was like the same. It was the same thing. The Wild destroyed the Rangers at home on Monday, and then went to Prudential on Wednesday for the Devils to absolutely kill them. Yeah. So, is it gonna be the same thing, or are the Rangers gonna get their first home win? Is the big question, I feel like.
I mean, what do you think, Jack? Because you're the resident Ranger fan here, so I feel like you'd be more familiar with what's going on. Like, 0-4 at home.
0-4 at home is horrible. I mean,
what's going on at Madison Square Garden?
You can't, as a team, you can't be 0-4 at home. I mean, you have one goal in four games at home. It's unacceptable. Will Cooley, one of the best rookies or one of the best younger players, hasn't really shown up for anything. I think he's 1 point in all of the games. Panarin played pretty well against Montreal. Last game he netted the goal, first minute of the game. But besides that, I mean, it's been a mixture of bad luck, but also like just not finding the back of the net. So it's difficult to watch. But their penalty kill has been great. I think it's seventh in the league. They stopped 88% of their penalties, but. You just got to get your production guys to go, really net some goals, start out early, maybe get one or two in the first period and then just hold them because the defense hasn't been bad really. Shesterkin's playing great.
Shesterkin is playing out of his mind. I think there's only one game at home this season where he's given up like more than a goal, or actually it might be two games where he's given up more than a goal now because the Wild game on Monday. It kind of feels like the same sentiment from last week for this Rangers team, that it's like, just put the puck in the net.
Yeah.
Put it in the net.
Well, it's also like crazy. Like, I don't know. I was watching the Wild Rangers recap and like, I don't know, the saves that I saw from the Wild, like, felt like a replay of the Lindgren Rangers game.
Oh yeah.
Can I jump in here a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I totally agree that they are just getting stopped by, like, these random goalies, and it's so...
They're not random. No, but they're tenders who get really hot from time to time, and they just keep doing it against the Rangers.
They get hot in MSG, and it's like, how is this happening? And then it's also, like, they're playing the Sharks tonight. San Jose has not won a game this season.
No.
And if the Rangers hand the Sharks their Sharks' first win of the season, continue this losing streak at home, it is just going to be so embarrassing. And it's like, before this season started, we were talking like the Rangers are going to be a better team than they were last season. They're going to like handle themselves better. And now I feel like how many games can we go on watching them, like, have good defense and, like, get good chances but not score? How many games can it be before we just say, okay, this is not a good team? Like, I know we're only 7-8 games in or whatever, but I'm having doubts. And I also, I said this to Lydia last time, like, last week on this podcast, but, like, Lafreniere is just not meeting my expectations for this season. He's on the top six, and he's not really doing much. And, yeah, and we're going to get into the Islanders, but it's, like, after seeing Matthew Schaefer, like, dominate the game on Tuesday, it's, like, look at our first overall pick and compare it to Matthew Schaefer, and it's so upsetting.
Just... It's bad. It's not a great situation, especially for home fans, because they spend a lot of money to get into that building at Madison Square Garden and to only have one goal on the season, no wins. But I mean, like you mentioned, the Sharks haven't won. They haven't actually won a game yet this year, and they're 0-2 straight up on the road. So 0-2 on the road versus 0-4 at home. Surely something must come of this for the New York Rangers.
I have to say, though, this is going to sound so bad, but, like, I think it would be so funny if the Sharks won tonight. Like, I think it would be so comical.
I would be the first one to, like, stand up and laugh.
Yeah.
Heartily.
Yeah.
That would be so embarrassing. That, like, that is horrible. Truly so embarrassing.
Yeah. It would be too good.
Sometimes, as both a Devils fan and someone who gets to cover the Devils for WFUV, it's kind of like I have to almost check myself, because it's the Devils are 6-1, and I'm like, mentally I'm trying to, like, downplay that fact, but at the same time it's like I want to put them on wagon watch really, really bad.
Yeah.
This team looks so unstoppable. And then meanwhile, this Ranger team, they look like they have enough to win some of these games. And it's something we talked about last week, Sophia, when we were with, Lydia and Grace. They are honestly putting themselves in scoring situations. They're getting good opportunities, but they cannot find the back of the cage. It's like the weirdest phenomenon ever. And so to that extent, I think Mika Zibanejad's quote that I brought up last week, I don't know whether to laugh or cry. Like, I thought it was funny at first. Now I honestly believe him, because I don't know what to do with this situation for the Rangers either. It's almost baffling. Like, we're almost there. If they lose to the Sharks, then I think it'd be baffling. Really baffling.
It's baffling. Yeah.
But until we get there, I don't think the Rangers, like, I don't know. I don't want to say they shouldn't have too much to worry about, but they kind of do have some things to worry about at this point. But that's the thing. Yeah. It all goes away with a win.
Yeah,
exactly.
If they beat the Sharks tonight and win at home, just get it over with.
Yeah.
That all goes away. But it gets more and more difficult to shake something off when everybody's talking about it.
After,
you know, like,
tonight, they go on that Western road trip against Calgary, Vancouver, Edmonton, Seattle. I don't know. I feel like if they win tonight against the Sharks, I don't really see that as anything special. I don't know what happens when they go to Calgary and Vancouver. I don't know, because also they play better on the road. But I just feel like something is not clicking, and I just don't understand what it is. And also, they're missing Trocheck, which I wonder if that is... has an impact on their scoring, which, like, he was there in the beginning of the season. He was there for the home opener shutout. But I do wonder if his missing presence is something that is affecting them.
Is it too early to mention Jonathan Quick having more than two goals allowed against?
It's just difficult, because I kind of was expecting it. I've been expecting a not so good season from him for a while. Like, he's getting older, and I know that, like, we have seen a lot of vintage Jonathan Quick in the Blue Shirts uniform, but I was kind of just feel like it's a matter of time before he's gonna be done and gonna be kind of a liability.
The sample size is a little small, but
But I do think...
Still, when you have a guy like Igor stand, like, yeah. he's your other yeah. option, it's like, okay, why don't we just play Igor, like, four straight games and then, like, kick yeah. one to Jonathan yeah. Quick just for the sake of keeping
which
him happy.
I think Igor is playing tonight, which I thought was an interesting... Quick played this week at some point. But, yeah, I think Igor's playing tonight, which is... I think it'll be good. I think that they can get the win tonight, but I don't know if they will.
Definitely.
They
and,
better.
Yeah. And chiming on Jonathan Quick, I feel like it's especially hard for him just because he's so old and
yeah.
he had such a legacy like earlier with the Kings. But also the fact that, I mean, Igor's one of, if not the best goaltenders in the league. And, you know, Quick really isn't going to get that much time on the ice. And that affects his playing and it's going to affect his goal scoring again. So... He's going to have good games, but I feel like he's not going to be, you know, someone to rely on throughout the season.
It's amazing still to, like, to think about how rough the Devils goaltender situation was just, like, 2 years ago. Like only two, maybe even less than 2 years ago, but, like, right after they got Jacob Markstrom, they went out and grabbed Jake Allen, and now Jake Allen is just a beast. I really don't know what else to say. The dude was expecting to play backup to Jacob Markstrom all season, and so was expecting backup usage, and then suddenly became the starter in the first month of the season because Markstrom went down again.
Yeah,
but he's still playing really really well, giving them chances to win. But like I mentioned before with Nico Daws, Rangers. Rangers have the Sharks tonight. They're going to need a win at home before they go on that West Coast road trip. But let's touch on the New York Islanders then, now that we've gone through the Devils, not super in depth, but like I don't think we need to really dive into the Devils until like after the heater's over, and then we can like we can deconstruct the heater once they cool off, But basically, all you need to know about the Devils, they're really hot right now, and you should probably be watching them if they're on TV. Rangers are struggling, but in a position to propel themselves out of the hole with a win tonight and then take that momentum with you on the road to the West Coast. But the New York Islanders, honestly, when you look at all three Metro teams, I feel like the Islanders have kind of now landed between the Devils and Rangers, not necessarily behind the New York Rangers. And the Islanders, from the start of the season, every power ranking under the sun had them like bottom three.
Yeah.
And I mentioned this last week too. Like, I do not think that they're actually a bottom three NHL team. They're supposed to be rebuilding, but a kid like Matthew Schaefer literally changes everything
about an
organization. What was that stat you had pregame, Emma?
So, Matthew Schaefer on Tuesday versus the Sharks. So, UBS Arena, Matthew Schaefer ties NHL record for longest point streak to open a career in NHL history. He's tied with Marek Zidlicky. I'm so sorry. I'm so bad at like name pronunciation. But that record was originally set in the 03-04 season with Nashville. So like it's been so long, and just like I don't know, like it's in if he gets like another assist or another goal or like just another point tonight, which seems likely, he is going to break that record. And like that's just like
that's
awesome.
That's really insane.
It's really insane.
It's cool to finally have a stat for Schaefer that isn't something related to how young he is.
Yeah.
Cuz like that I think there was the was it like youngest player to, I think was it to score a point in a game?
Yeah, I think it's the youngest player to start out like on a seven game point streak.
Okay, yeah. So like he had a bunch of stats from the start of like first couple weeks of the season where they were all related to the fact that he is incredibly young, 18 years old.
Yeah.
But now finally, like that's a record that like anybody can touch. But anybody probably won't touch, considering it was over 20 years since
over
the last time it changed. So Schaefer's been giving them a lot of juice. Islanders, they started the season dropping the first three to the Pens, Caps, and Jets, respectively, but then turned it right around, beat an Oilers team that also lost to the New Jersey Devils. So they're seemingly Edmonton's trying to figure something out, but I don't think you can discount that win in any way. The Senators on the road, who are missing Brady Tkachuk, which could be a problem, but the Sens are still pretty solid, even without Tkachuk.
Yeah.
Their young talent is really stepping up. Shout out to Pinto Parlay. But, yeah, so they beat the Sens 5-4. Then the Sharks, as mentioned already, they beat 4-3. They have the Red Wings, the Islanders do, tonight at UBS Arena at 7 p.m. So I think last week, Sophia, when we were talking about this Isles team, what did you say? You said they had like a 5-game heater coming up.
Oh, yeah, I did say that.
I think you said the Islanders might win the next 5. Yeah. Was that before the Oilers game? Or no, it was after the Oilers game. Because we were talking about, like, how did they beat the Oilers? Yeah. They, like, scored multiple times in the third period, under 10 minutes to play. I remember the Devils media were, like, talking about it at the Devils game that same night. But now, since then, they've beaten the Sens, beaten the Sharks. Now they've got the Red Wings at home. So they're almost halfway home on this predicted win streak, Sophia.
Yeah. The Red Wings lost to the Sabres yesterday, but before that they had won 5 straight. So I still do think the Islanders can totally do it, though.
The loss to the Sabres really resets your perspective.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I was watching that
straight
game,
back so, down to earth.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the game against the Sharks was interesting because they went down 1-0. And then they had to come back. The defense in that game was very all over the place. There was, like, 5 goals scored between both teams in the first period, and it was just, like, wow. But then after that, Sorokin played really, really, really well. Or I guess in the first period, too. Sorokin had a great game, which was really good to see because he has been sort of inconsistent. And I think that just, like, this 3-game win streak is very, very good for their, like, momentum building. And it's the Red Wings, Flyers, Bruins, and then the Hurricanes. But I think that if they win tonight against the Red Wings, I don't see why they wouldn't be able to beat the Flyers and the Bruins after that. And then going back to Schaefer, I'm really developing a love for this kid. Like, I don't like the Islanders as a fan. I love covering them, but, like, I'm a Rangers fan. But, like, I'm a Schaefer fan. He is amazing to watch, and like getting to see him break these records, and also like post game he is so well spoken. It's so impressive that he is only 18. He is phenomenal.
No question about the kid's maturity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I get like 18 years old is just really, really ridiculous. I think I still struggle at times to come to terms with the fact that like sport, like rookies in sports just across the board like come into the league at like 18, 19, 20 years old. I'm 21. They're all younger than me.
Yeah.
And that's like something that's like kind of creeping into my consciousness now, yeah. But like just wasn't really a thing that I was thinking about yet. Really ridiculous.
Yeah.
Could I have played in the NHL at 18? No, I can't play in the NHL now.
Also, there were so many young players in that game because the Sharks have such a young team. Like they had Celebrini, Smith, Graf, and Graf scored.
Oh my god! Did you see that social media post with
yes!
like the
oh
was it like a mom or a grandma or something found Mac at like out at a restaurant?
It's so
like, start recording
funny.
Him.
No, yes, I like, saw that.
Who are you guys again? It's like, what's your Instagram? And he's just like god. Mac Celebrini.
And she was like, "Oh, like the girls are gonna hit you up on Gmail." Like, and it's like, how did she even find them? Like, I don't understand.
How did she recognize that they were hockey players,
exactly.
But not recognize that they were like Macklin celebrating? I forget who he was with.
He was with Smith.
Oh yeah. But
I've seen that lady all around Instagram.
So funny.
She like actually finds like I think she interviewed Kyrie Irving
completely
on accident. On accident.
Like, it's so random.
She saw Kyrie Irving.
She's
she was like, "What do you do for
really
a living?"
Lucky.
I'm a basketball player. And I'm like, oh my god.
She's
how
like,
do you
we
find
all
these people?
We all have that one friend who just like does random side quests and runs into famous people,
yeah.
And they'll just like send a selfie to the group chat,
yes.
Totally unsolicited, and it'll just be like them with LeBron, and it's like, how?
Yeah.
But also, I think if we're going to address Jonathan Quick for the Rangers, I think we have to address Ilya Sorokin for the New York Islanders, because it's been a kind of a rough start for Sorokin through the first few games that he's played this year. He has a 3.9 goals against average and an .873 save percentage in five games. He's 2-3. But fear not, Islanders fans, because the goaltending coach is gone.
Oh, yeah, I saw that today, and I was like, oh, that's an interesting decision.
Piero Greco got the boot 7 games into the season, and at 3-3. So, like, it seemed kind of weird.
Definitely
that
weird.
They have a .500 record, but they're not happy with the goaltending, so sayonara. They didn't wait until it got worse. They just got rid of him. I'm not sure if they have another one lined up.
I think they do. I think they brought him up from the AHL.
Okay, so
I believe
new goaltender coach is up. The goal of bringing a new coach in would be to continue to help Sorokin grow and then try to get him a little bit more sharpened up after the start of the season. But I think it also... It also bears mentioning that Sorokin is currently without Semyon Varlamov. He's still on his way back from a knee injury. And sure, Dave Riddick does a decent job as a backup goaltender. But I mean, like, I think the Islanders are much better off bouncing between Sorokin and Varlamov. It just feels like a stronger goaltending group than with Riddick in there. But I think we also, should we also talk about Pierre Engvall? Because that came up in a couple of hockey group chats with WFUV alumni, specifically one Nick Palmer, who is very disappointed in the fact that Lou Lamoriello, in his infinite wisdom before he was done with the Islanders, what was that contract? Is it a 7?
Let me see.
What is it? 7? It's not 7x3, right? I forget what Engvall's contract is, but he's going to be an Islander until...
Yeah, no, it is 7x3.
Okay, so it's a 7x3 for Engvall, and he's injured again, missing the entire season
this
year. How ridiculous, Sophia?
Well, it's like, how are you going to... Like, and he gets injured. Like, this is not the first time. And so... It's just a thing with the NHL, though. It's like they pay these guys, and then they either can't perform or they get injured, and it's like, okay, well, yeah, no, it's a recurring thing, and I can only imagine Nick Palmer's reaction to this.
It was very funny. I have to say, can I find it in my text messages? Maybe. Where is it? Nick Palmer. Okay, so yeah, Nick Palmer just... He sent like a Photoshop of you know that old meme, the old Stonks meme with like the photo. He just Photoshopped Lou Lamoriello's face over that guy. But then Grace McCarron also just sent this photo. It's just Pierre Engvall. That's just all it is. That totally reminds me from that group chat as well, because it kind of feels like we're sort of done with the Islanders here. They're in a rough spot, but I think Sorokin, like, if he can get it going with a new coach,
he can pick it up.
Yeah,
they're 500, but on a 3-game winning streak.
So.
Yeah, 500, but on a 3-game winning streak and playing the Red Wings tonight, so they could go over 500. And if they do beat the Red Wings, they're also 2 wins away from meeting Sophia Smith's quota of winning the next 5 games. But that did remind me when I was looking at that group chat of one more piece of like general news that I wanted to talk about was Brad Marchand's return to the TD Garden in Boston.
Tears.
The Panthers and the Bruins, and they played the little video on the screen, and Brad Marchand, the Rat King himself, was brought to tears in Boston. Oh, I can only imagine what kind of chirps he was getting in the locker room for the Panthers. I honestly wonder if any, though, because the Panthers have like a really solid group. They've won 2 Stanley Cups, one of them with Marchand, and then Marchand re-signed. because they want to continue to win cups. So I feel like this might be one of those moments where Marchand kind of gets away with it, and like nobody's really probably poking at him in that locker room. I think it was just like a big support system.
And he shouted them out like post game because they were like, "Do you miss Boston?" And like obviously he misses Boston, but he was like, "Well, I've made a lot of good friends here in Florida and on this team, and like we all support each other." And so that was really good to see. And I'm happy that he found a home, even though he was traded from, you know, the team that he was with his whole career.
It's very easy to support each other from the comfort of a hot tub with like a pina colada in one hand and the Stanley Cup in the other. But I mean, they have something really special going on in Florida.
Yeah.
But Brad Marchand also had a very special career in Boston. So I thought it was really cool to see. You guys, like, what did you guys think of the way that Boston handled it and the way that Brad Marchand was able to almost not handle it?
See, I feel like, okay, I'm about to connect this to baseball, so everybody lock in.
It's fine. We've been cross sport today, so
okay.
That's good.
I feel like this is I wanted to see, but I was disappointed that I didn't see when the Mets went to Yankee Stadium with Juan Soto.
Oh.
Like, I just
really
think that it's so, I hate.
Because, wait, Caps fan, Nats fan, right?
No. Caps fan, Mets fan.
Wow.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Oh, my.
And Heat's fan. I'm all across.
Wait, so if you're a Mets fan.
That's brutal.
This is, I'm worried we're getting so
yeah,
off
confused.
Track now. But, like, if you're a Mets fan, why would you want the Yankees to play a video for Juan Soto?
No. It's not that I want them to play a video for Juan Soto.
Oh.
It's just the parallel is just, I mean, not the parallel. The difference between the reception of somebody who's played on your team before was just so wildly different. And like, I, even though like I understand being upset with like a player leaving, whether it's traded or like optional, I think that it's so stupid to just be mad at them for that, like when it's their life and they're
but
doing
it was
like,
Soto's decision to leave.
Well, yes, that's the difference.
I would say it, and also the fact that it was one year for Soto versus so
like
many
15.
For Marchand.
I mean,
but it changes everything if the Yankees win the World Series in 2024 and then Soto leaves.
Yeah.
But like, obviously he might not leave if they win the World Series. Yeah. But like, say he does leave after they win the World Series.
Yeah.
I imagine that video is much more heartfelt.
Yeah.
And like, or
it's
there
just,
is one, but like to not win, like effectively that year of Juan Soto.
Yeah.
Like, sure, it meant something in the moment, but it means nothing to me now as a Yankee fan. Means nothing to me. Juan Soto means nothing to me anymore.
Yeah.
And
well,
I don't even care that he went to the Mets anymore because he got what he deserved. They missed the playoffs, and he got what he deserved.
Yeah.
So we move on.
Okay,
we turn the page.
Okay.
The baseball gods made their decision.
Let me clarify, because I fear there was miscommunication. I'm not saying in any way, I'm not saying these situations are the same.
Yeah.
However, I really personally like seeing the support still from, like, even if it's not like, oh, we're in love with you. And like, I'm not saying the Yankees should have played a Juan Soto video, because I think that would have been stupid as well.
Yeah.
But like, just the level of support from like your previous team, because that like that was your family for a long time. And like, so, and I'm not saying that there wasn't support between
the
Yankees and Juan Soto when he came back.
I see what you're saying. It's sort of like a, like almost like a shock between how
it's a shock
extremely negative
it's a
some
shock
team player relationships are versus how incredibly positive some are.
I feel
like Marchand and the Bruins.
It's the same as the way that the Islanders fans treat Tavares.
Okay. Like,
right?
What, Marchand and the Bruins or
no, the Soto?
Soto and the Yankees.
Because like, Yankees fans don't like Soto.
Yeah.
And like, Islanders fans don't like Tavares because he left and went to Toronto.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which again, like, that was not me saying the same situation.
Yeah.
Let me be very clear. But yeah, it was just definitely a big shock, because I feel like the last very big reaction that I saw from a team when a player returned was the Soto, like, or the one that I was paying attention to.
Yeah.
And then I saw this and I was like, whoa, like that can happen.
It was a very big swing.
Which like again, different situations, but like that can happen. Like we can be happy for each other. Like I don't know. It was just
I think in the NHL specifically, I think it happens like a lot more often than in other sports. And that family aspect has a very large part to do with it. I feel like hockey teams, and especially NHL hockey clubs, really build. They build families out of their teams. They aren't just like teams constructed of individuals.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
At the NFL level, you have teams that are built like structured really like families. Detroit Lions come to mind in that aspect.
Yeah.
But then there are some teams that aren't as much of a family unit. Carolina Panthers. but in the NHL, I feel like across the board, most teams kind of have that like family structure idea, even with like having something like the player assistance program in the NHL, which doesn't really exist in other sports. For really, if a player is dealing with any kind of a personal issue that's preventing them from like playing their best hockey, the NHL has a system constructed to like help them get back to playing good hockey again. So I think it stems from that general feeling in the NHL. And so it was just really nice to see.
Yeah.
Even though the Florida Panthers and Brad Marchand are all rats anyway.
Well,
they play rat hockey, and the Hurricanes do it too. And as a Devils fan, I can't sit by and be like, oh, yeah, no, I think the Panthers did a great job with that. Like, no. Boo the Panthers. Boo the Hurricanes. The Devils are the best team in the Metro and the NHL.
Okay.
I go back to this a lot, but the Marchand on the Panthers always makes me think about how in whatever that series that the Bruins played the Panthers and like there was like a 40-point difference between the two teams in the playoffs, and Marchand is going for the breakaway on Bobrovsky in game 5. There's like literally 3 seconds of the clock and he misses he like doesn't get the shot in. And the Panthers go on to win the series, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, if that didn't happen, Marchand would not be on the Panthers right now. And they wouldn't have won 2 cups, probably. Like, it's just like, the ripple effect is crazy. And so that's why, like, seeing that whole thing and seeing Marchand get so, like, it just means so much. I don't know. It's just fascinating, the ripple effect.
Yeah. I mean, well, Marchand has been, like, their main guy, the Bruins' main guy, for, like, I think over basically 15 years.
It was part of their big three when they were, like, competing regularly for Stanley Cups.
Bruins have always been a decent contender, but Marchand has just always played a great role.
But then as those guys, like, started to retire, you start gravitating away from the team, Marchand became, like, the last bastion of that.
And then he just left. Which is, I mean...
Well, didn't the Bruins traded him, right? So it was kind of...
I don't know if he would have taken... I think he was surprised.
If it was up to him, I imagine he would have retired a Bruin. But, like, you know, you get traded, you get traded. The Bruins were not making a run for the playoffs. They needed to get his payroll off of theirs. And... You know, the Panthers had room. Clearly they had room because they signed him to an extension too. And now he's never leaving South Florida. So
nobody ever leaves South Florida.
No, nobody ever leaves. They honestly, they look like they could probably, once they get healthy again, the Florida Panthers look like they're poised for
another
run.
It makes me so upset. It makes me so upset.
Thing is, though, they might have to finally go through somebody else that's not the Oilers. Because, I mean, as it stands right now, the Oilers are not looking as strong as we would expect. Although, remember two seasons ago, remember last season, like, the Oilers have not had good starts to their regular seasons. Mm-hmm. And then have put it together as the season has gone on.
Yeah.
But, I mean, right now, for me, out of the Western Conference, it's probably the Stars or... The Colorado Avalanche. The Avalanche look so good. I mean, like, the talent across the board. They don't even have their main starting goalie back yet. Mackenzie Blackwood is still on his way back from injury. Scott Wedgwood, though, has been playing insane. Obviously, Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar, Arturi Lehkonen. Actually having a pretty solid season as well. And they've got their captain back, Gabe Landeskog, which I knew was holding them back this whole time. But now that Landeskog is back, the family unit is finally together again. Now they can start competing again. It all connects. The NHL is beautiful. Hockey's a beautiful sport. The Devils are the best team in it.
Okay.
And I think I think that's just about going to do it for us today on 5-on-3. Thank you so much to Emma Leonardi. Thank you to Jack Alexander. Thank you to Sophia Smith on production and on the mic a little bit for us today. I have been Tucker Austin, and 5-on-3 is a production of WFUV Sports.